Welcome to Knowledge Cast. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. This is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge. I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK. And today we're speaking with Reggie Adams, Director of Information Development at ADP. Reggie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invite. Definitely looking forward to this. And I do listen to the podcast. I am a big fan. It's one of the few, very few podcasts that focus on knowledge management. And your guests in the past, I've learned a lot from. So happy to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I've learned a lot too. What's been a lot of fun for me is actually just that, getting to meet more practitioners in the field and learning how they talk about KM. So thanks for being here again. Let's start there. As you know, since you listen, where I always begin is to ask for your definition of knowledge management. Such a beat up term, so many different people define it from a people centric or content centric or tech centric perspective. Talk to me.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about this myself for quite a while. It's funny, anytime I tell somebody I'm a knowledge manager and I'm in knowledge management, they're like, ooh, what is that? Sounds important, but what is it? And so I had time to think about it. I personally define knowledge management as a discipline that allows people to accomplish a desired end through the capture, structure, reuse, and improvement of contextualized information as a part of their workflow. I personally leverage this definition as part of the work that I do within ADP, but that definition seems to serve me effectively.
That's great. So you've got the verbs there. I always like focusing on those verbs. I love the fact that you include improvement there. I think this is one that is often missed in traditional KM circles. It's all about the capture and the management of knowledge. In more modern circles, I think improvement is one of the topics that frequently needs to be included in the early planning. So when I hear improvement, I think, okay, we've got to enhance the content. We've got to identify what's right or wrong. We've got to potentially tag it. We've got to put it in the right place. Tell me more about that improvement of knowledge.
You know, that's an element of it, but also improvement is refining knowledge content in whatever format it exists over time, as more is learned, as circumstances change. I always liked the analogy of someone in knowledge management as that of a farmer or a caretaker of a garden. Yes, you can do the tilling of the soil and plant the seeds and you can start to sprout vegetation, but there is always the work to remove weeds, to take care of the garden, and make improvements. And so knowledge is no different. There is no pristine, we have arrived, our knowledge is perfect, we don't have to touch it. The way that I always like to describe this to our stakeholders and our partners who may have kind of that view of knowledge. So one of the first things me and my team make it a point of doing is kind of re-educating and changing the perspectives of what knowledge is. A good knowledge base, it's always growing, it's always churning, and there's this slow culling process that always occurs, and that's the natural state of knowledge. And that's how I like to describe improvement and its importance.
Nice. So we're talking about content governance, for lack of a more interesting term. Farmer Reggie, tell me how you accomplish this.
Right. So through a lot of engagement, a lot of helping people to understand the value of knowledge, but also listening to the real concerns and goals that our key partners have. I don't want listeners to walk away thinking it's an easy thing, and I'm still trying to crack the code, and I don't know if there's a code to be cracked. It's frankly an area of consistent effort to make sure stakeholders are heard and are bought into the process. Now, our governance strategy, we align to the Consortium of Service Innovation, KCS, methodology. And so we do have a adoption/governance team that's a part of all of the KCS deployments within ADP, within our organization. But on top of that, we do bring together a broader tent of people involved with our deployments from different functional areas to look at the overall strategy, the outcomes being produced by our KCS program, and provide input and guidance as to how we can achieve more effectively some of the desired outcomes. And so it's that level of engagement which has been important for us. And then the other piece that I'll just mention, governance has meant giving away some of the power to our stakeholders as well. It's easy to really feel as the expert in knowledge. Hey, we know how this needs to be governed. We know how things need to be rolled out in terms of processes. But I also found that really taking some suggestions from our key stakeholders, giving away some of the power and allowing them to have skin in the game as well, has led to more engagement and people taking ownership of the program. And this is truly a collective program.
I love how you've put this. Tell me a little bit more about this. When you talk about empowering your stakeholders and you're talking in the terms of governance, so are you empowering them to flag bad content, to identify when there's a gap, to raise an alarm if something is wrong? Like, what does that look like in practice?
Yeah, so all the above. We empower them to flag content, to let us know if something needs to be updated. Also, we allow them to help guide our KM strategy as it pertains to strategic initiatives that we see is coming down the pike. So, you know, anytime there's a new technology update or a new policy change, you know, we reach out to our stakeholders regarding their perspective around what is about to occur, the change that is about to happen in the business, and help them and allow them to really get involved with some of the strategic planning. We also allow them to help drive some of the communication forward to their stakeholders. And so that combination of tactically being able to flag articles, letting us know what needs to be updated, to strategically helping us steer the ship, so to speak, and be prepared for changes in the business and even regular occurring events. So ADP, we're deeply involved with HR and human capital management. And so you have things like open enrollment, you know, enrolling for your benefits and all of those just standard business operation events. We partner very closely with our stakeholders to be prepared for that.
Excellent. So we're broadening to what was going to be my next question around really the scope of KM within ADP. Before we go there, I want to go back to content governance because I think this is a topic that's not covered enough. You use this great word, culling content, right? A healthy knowledge base will have new stuff come in. It will have old or obsolete or outdated stuff go out. What's the trigger? How do you know when it's time for something to leave your knowledge base?
We leverage two processes, one proactive and one reactive. So on the proactive front, we leverage content activities such as when was the last time the knowledge article was used? Was it used within the past year? And since we do align to KCS methodology, we do look at when it was last. One of the key best practices of KCS is when you use knowledge to solve an issue, to solve a case, you create an association between that knowledge article and the case. You basically link the knowledge article to the case and you close your case. We can track that behavior. And if we see something that hasn't been used or linked within the past year, it's on the short list for a subject matter expert or a knowledge domain expert to review. That's more of a proactive. We also look at when something was last updated. And so that falls on the short list. If it hasn't been updated and what our window typically is in a year, then it makes it to that short list and it's reviewed by our partners. From a reactive standpoint, all of the knowledge content within our knowledge base has embedded in it a field, really a custom field that allows people to leave feedback about the article. They can flag it. We have reason codes, everything to let us know exactly what is occurring. And we do receive some recommendations that, hey, actually, this is something that could just be archived. Behind the scenes, we have queues that allow us to channel feedback to our key partners. We're very fortunate in the fact that this KCS methodology has grown. And so we have key partners in every functional group and every line of business within my division, which is the human resource or HR outsourcing division. And we have partners across every functional group. And so we're able to channel that feedback to our key stakeholders. They're also able to look at every piece of feedback coming from a member of our service teams. They could take care of the issue. We can track metrics on that. So it makes them look good because then they can report, hey, this is what we're doing to drive value. And so it really has been a win-win situation for us.
Nice. That all sounds really mature. You talked about empowering your stakeholders. Are you also incentivizing them? You just mentioned it makes them look good. Are you going beyond that? Is it part of their annual review or their bonuses involved? How do you get somebody excited about flagging bad content?
Yeah, you know what? We have not leveraged the formal, you know, incentivization, the bonus or anything. A lot of times a digital high five and a recognition regarding, hey, here is the value that this team is providing. Here is the value that this person is providing. One of the things that we're leaning more into is actually showing how many cases and how many of our clients have been positively impacted by a contribution made by a member of the team. So we have a large platform as a KM team. And just by sharing the platform, really allowing someone to shine and be acknowledged for their knowledge, that has gone a long way for us. We have also seen some members of our partner teams that receive promotions, that receive opportunities with more responsibility because now they're recognized as someone that is bringing a tremendous amount of value and knowledge to the table. And so just making sure that we are alert, we see who's providing value, and we take it upon ourselves to elevate that person and provide them the platform to shine has really worked well.
I like that a lot. I mean, does anybody really need another $5 Starbucks gift card? What you're talking about is, I mean, everybody could, yes. but what you're describing here is, hey, we're going to show the impact of our work, that it's helping our colleagues and our clients. And we're going to show how it's potentially a path up for you in the organization. At the end of the day, those are two very meaningful things. And I think that in and of itself is great incentive. That's great. Okay, so great. Now let's go to the bigger topic. You began alluding to strategic initiatives at ADP. What's on the KM roadmap? What's in your plans?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for us is complete the expert network. And what that means is our goal is to have KCS embedded, KCS expertise embedded in every functional group across HRO at ADP. Now, there is the expectation today that people do use the knowledge base. It's a part of our new hire training. We don't even call it KCS. This is, you know, here are your tools. This is how you use it. And it's just kind of standard operating procedure to use the knowledge base. And it just so happens it aligns to KCS principles. The expert network is taking it one step further and allowing people to develop and grow and elevate their capability to be able to contribute knowledge to the knowledge base and go through the KCS licensing process of candidate contributor and then become a publisher, which allows them to publish content externally to the client. And so that level, that advanced level of KCS proficiency is where we want to complete the expert network and really provide HRO the agility to respond to any kind of business change. Heaven forbid there's another pandemic. We don't want another COVID. However, there was a lot of movement that needed to happen. And we had this expert network partially completed. We were able to be more agile and make all the adjustments needed. So we want to complete the job and finish the expert network. Beyond that, you know, and you're probably asked this question later, so I don't want to jump too far ahead, but you know, AI is huge. I know it's a sexy topic and all of that. And people are talking about, you know, what's AI going to mean for us? And how does generative AI impact the knowledge manager? And one, I don't believe the subject matter expert is obsolete. It will never be obsolete. We are focused on leveraging AI in ways that drive the administrative ease of maintaining a thriving, growing, and evolving knowledge base. And we also want to look at ways of leveraging AI to improve findability of the content and evolving us beyond the container of knowledge and insight being the article.
So let's make sure that that you and I are clearly in agreement on this. Artificial intelligence is really exciting from a technology standpoint, from an ability to harness an organization's knowledge, but it's what it's always been. It's garbage in, garbage out. So unless you've got the right knowledge as an organization, unless that knowledge is well-structured and reliable, trusted, then AI is just going to be scooping up a bunch of bad stuff. So what I often say is that I think the job security of a knowledge manager is pretty secure. We're going to be around for a long while because it's so critical to make AI work to have that right and reliable knowledge and content in a form that AI can actually use it. That said, let's talk about the cool stuff you're doing, because it does sound like you're approaching it from some interesting use cases. You mentioned leveraging AI to improve how your organization manages expertise and to improve the findability of the organization. You want to break that down? Where are you in the cycle? What does that mean?
Yeah, so we're at the very beginning of the journey, which is, you know, oftentimes the most exciting point because everything is possible. So to give a little bit more clarity around this, the findability component, there is exciting capabilities that are developing around targeting specific, personalizing the experience someone has with knowledge based on things like their geography or their profile. And now we're really doing some more investigation into that. Also, you know, with AI, there's the ability to kind of get away a bit from the article being the container of insight and expertise to really taking that insight and expertise and making it available wherever the requester or user of that knowledge may need it. And that means things like chatbots or in-product support or making things appear in a search, but in a way where the very best parts of a knowledge article are pulled out, compiled, and presented first and foremost in front of the user, taking away all of the preliminary kind of scrolling through and scanning through a knowledge article someone has to do. All of that is exciting. We're at the very beginning of that. And so that's kind of next on the roadmap for us.
So do we get to talk about omnichannel delivery and componentized content? It sounds like that's what you're describing there.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely ties into that.
So let's break a couple of these things down. This is all great stuff. So first of all, you talked about customization or personalized experience. An organization has a world of knowledge, a world of data. If you can mate that up with an understanding of your person, basically their characteristics, where they sit physically, what their function is, ideally what their skills and competencies are, then you can start leveraging AI to deliver more customized knowledge to them. Is that in the roadmap?
That is. And you know, the thing that I've always noticed, and I've been in the field of KM, say for the better part of, 14 years. It just kind of sneaks up on you.
Oh yeah, it does.
But you know, that is always an area of opportunity. And, you know, we can make gains and improvements, just the findability and making it easier and decreasing effort. I think even with AI is always going to be one of those natural points of exertion to constantly improve and make easier because people will expect more. And so I think, you know, that's always something that we're going to lean into. And we take that very, very seriously, not only for our internal clients, our associates, but of course, you know, our external clients as well. My team, through partnership with our key functional groups and business units, create content to make available through our external channels as well, to also make the effort of resolving whatever challenge our clients are trying to solve easier and just decreasing that level of effort. So it's an effortless experience. So it's an ongoing thing. And yeah, you're right. There's definitely a lot of work in job security with with that sort of thing. But that's front and center for us and a top priority.
Excellent. And then we get to start talking about componentized content. So you use this great phrase, articles as container, and rethinking an article as the container. And I really like that. For our listeners that aren't as familiar with these concepts of omnichannel and decomposing content or content deconstruction, the basic idea is that we're trying to avoid the search within a search. You search for the answer, you get a link to a document, you open the document, you got to search inside this long document to get the answer. What end users actually want is to search for an answer and get the answer. And what Reggie is describing is the means to that end, the ability to have your search interface give you the answer without you having to click, the ability for a chatbot or some other tool to, in plain language, provide you not a link, but an answer. So Reggie, there's a lot to that. How far has ADP gone? You mentioned that you're at the beginning of the journey. Do you have the tech stack selected? Do you know what your timeline is to be able to deliver some of these capabilities? What's your plan?
Yeah, so we're when I say we're at the very beginning, we have a solid platform, and we're thankfully have a platform. We leverage Salesforce, and we're currently really looking at what does that look like from a integration standpoint? What does that look like for all of our partners? And just like any other organization, we have multiple technologies that we have to integrate together. And so that's always a consideration, but we're truly at the very beginning. The basic touch points that we have from an external standpoint that many organizations have, we really want to take it to that level and do it very well. So, you know, you mentioned the chatbots, you mentioned, you know, the portals. One area that I'm investigating and really looking into more, the consortium is also kind of talking through, is the concept around in-product support. So what does it mean when someone's actually using the tool to get a specific task done? How can help content be delivered seamlessly into their workflow? I think there's a tremendous area of opportunity there. The goal, though, for me and for the KM team is that this would be integrated content. It would be flowing from the same source. We wouldn't want to have all these separate kind of repositories of information that we have supporting these different touch points, but rather one common source benefiting from the calling process that we've established with our key partners. So we're always getting contextualized expertise, improving the content that we can then deliver regardless of what channel, it just is available when it's needed. And that's a lofty goal, but that's what we're working towards.
Nah, that's the grand vision, right? I mean, that's why KM exists as a field. It's the uniter of all these other fields. And to be able to do it in your specific industry at ADP makes so much sense and is such a clear return on investment, right? So if you've got somebody calling, seconds matter, and you want to ensure that you are getting them the complete and consistent answer as quickly as possible. If you have a customer who's choosing to self-serve, you want to ensure that it is, once again, the same answer they would have gotten if they'd called or if they'd printed out a manual or whatever else. So that consistency of knowledge delivery as well as the speed of knowledge delivery, I think, is really critical.
And another component to that is the visibility, right? So we want to ensure that, you know, whoever's providing the service to the client can actually see what their journey has been and what articles or what information they have referenced. So we don't have to have our client restate everything that they've already been through, because that's not an effortless experience. And we really want to make that as seamless as possible.
KnowledgeCast is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge, the world's largest dedicated knowledge management consultancy. From training to benchmarks, strategy, design, prototyping, and all the way to enterprise-level implementations, Enterprise Knowledge wants to be your services partner. Spanning the fields of knowledge management, knowledge graphs, data, learning, advanced content management, and enterprise artificial intelligence, contact us at info@enterprise-knowledge.com to discuss how we can support you.
Now, give me a little bit of history on KM at ADP. Are you the first person, and I noticed that your title has changed. It used to be a KM title, and now you've got a Director of Information Development as a title. Talk to me about what KM has historically been at ADP and your role in perhaps promoting it.
I can highlight what my journey has been. I've been with ADP for 4 years. KM as a broader discipline has existed within ADP. We're a large organization. So, you know, HRO is one of many different business divisions within ADP. We were, upon my start with ADP, really looking at KCS as a path for HRO. Before I came to ADP, I was with the state of Arizona as knowledge manager, working with agencies, boards, and commissions. Before that, higher education and oil and gas, leveraging KCS. And so one of the charges for me was, let's look at how we can chart a path forward, leveraging this methodology within HRO. Now, you know, HRO stands for HR outsourcing. We provide support for organizations regardless of what their HR need is. We provide support, very tactical matters such as running payroll, all the way to things that are very strategic, like talent strategy planning and everything that's associated with that and everything in between. And so you can imagine all the different domains of knowledge, the different levels of insight that's needed, the very tactical insight that's needed to more of the broad and far reaching. And so KCS represented for us a means to quickly and seamlessly bring the insight from the organization HRO together in a knowledge base where it was up to date, it was coherent, and matched the content and context of those that would leverage the knowledge base. And the only way to really stay in tune with that was a methodology that we really were able to get that speed and have partners in the business. And so that 4 years was just that. Now, that first year was fun. You definitely have to, when you come to someone and you say, I am going to allow other people whom you may or may not know, earn the right to publish content and edit and update content. Well, that's change. KM in itself is change. KCS definitely is change. So I would say for the better part of the first year, it was just meeting key stakeholders, understanding what their concerns were, and starting to create the urgency around why this is something that is going to be needed. So this change could be better embraced. I was very fortunate that I had a fantastic leader, vice president that brought me in and was an amazing sponsor and champion, which I would say is probably like the number one key to success is having that senior level sponsorship and someone that believes in you and the program and what you're trying to accomplish. And then the other key that was definitely in play the first couple of years was approaching stakeholders with a sense of humility, definitely having the confidence of, look, we're not just shooting from the hip. We have a methodology. It's proven. It's like Six Sigma. Other organizations are doing it in multiple industries. So I'm not just bringing whatever to you, that this is a tried and true methodology. That was key, but also delivering the message in a way where it was humble, where it's like, I want to hear your concerns. I want to hear what's unique about your group. And people oftentimes just want to be heard and just know that you're acknowledging their unique concerns and needs, and they'll walk with you. And so that has been the journey. And now as we started to pick up steam and we have, I would say, about 60% of our roadmap complete in terms of advanced level KCS skills introduced into the functional areas within HRO, roughly 60% complete, over 100 or so content owners across the business. We are getting to the point where now KCS is becoming a key driver for every other business initiative that we are engaged in, from rolling out new technology. One of the things that people ask is, who has achieved advanced KCS level training? We want them to be a part of this initiative. So as we have learnings, we can quickly respond to them and then put whatever knowledge content is needed into circulation. So it's really starting to, in year four, really starting to accelerate.
First of all, congratulations. You've clearly made a really major impact for the organization. I also noticed that you're both a certified Scrum Master and certified product owner. So clearly you're a believer in Agile. How have you leveraged your Agile experience and mindset as part of your role?
Yeah, so I operate like a product owner. We're a Scrum team. I operate like a product owner. And so connecting with our stakeholders and collecting, you know, their needs and identifying how knowledge can help address that. And some of the technology developments that we're partnering with our tech partners to introduce is how I operate. We also operate with all of the ceremonies that are associated with Scrum. You know, we have our sprint planning, our retrospectives, our stand-ups. We're actually on a 3-week cadence as opposed to 2. And we do leverage a little bit of SAFe, which is Scaled Agile Framework. And so we just completed our program increment or PI quarterly planning to really look at all of the things that we're going to accomplish. Very early in my career in a past life before ADP, I just remember it was my first KM role. And I was just getting hit from all sides with just requests and asks, and can you do this for me? Can your team do that? And I had so much work and so many requests, I honestly didn't know how we were going to like respond to it. And I had a colleague, I was actually going through my doctoral program at the time, that she was just talking about her work and that she had to go to a Scrum meeting. And like, Scrum, what is that? That's is like rugby or what are you talking about? And she described what Scrum was the first time I heard about Agile Scrum. And I was like, you know what? What you describe will solve every single one of my problems and headaches that I have right now. How can I learn about it? And then that kind of opened a whole new door. And we leveraged that. All of my teams from that point on have leveraged Scrum. And I feel like there are natural synergies between KM and Agile Scrum.
For sure. I think one of the biggest issues in the history of KM is lack of proof. People say KM's good for you, KM's going to help you, KM's going to help the organization. Prove it. And with an Agile mindset, you're really forced to prove it. You're really forced to say, let us put something in the hands of our stakeholders and show it to them. And it sounds like that's exactly what you've done at ADP. So you touched on two things that I wanted to make sure that we had time for. The first was how you got into KM in the first place. So you mentioned, I believe, 14 years and your first role in KM, drinking from the fire hose. Tell us the story of how you picked KM or KM picked you.
I think KM picked me, and I realized that I wanted to be picked. And it was kind of interesting. It was really just a chance conversation I had during my time as my background is learning and development. I do think there's a lot of synergies between learning and development and KM. My previous manager of mine wanted and felt like we needed to have a knowledge management function within the learning and development organization. And this was, you know, during my time with the University of Phoenix. And up to that point, I was a facilitator. I would train our teams, our academic counselors. I would go in and teach them what they needed to know. And we did have resources that were available to them, dashboards and guides that they would use as reference material. And so for whatever reason, my boss supervisor at the time felt like we needed a KM function to kind of manage that, but also to focus on that delivery of micro learning, that delivery of on the job resources to support kind of those just in time questions that emerge. And she approached me and was like, hey, I think you would be great to start a KM function, a knowledge management function. I was like, what is that? I had to actually research what it was. And at the time I was big into, I remember the first resource I looked at was from APQC, the New Edge in Knowledge. And then I started reading a lot of Ikujiro Nanaka's work on the knowledge spiral and the knowledge creating company. And then I discovered KCS, which really kind of took my trajectory in a whole nother direction. But I entered the field through the learning and development umbrella. Although since then, you know, I've been based in learning and development. I've been based in IT. I've been based in customer service at my various organizations. So it's kind of interesting where they place KM, but my roots are in learning and development.
I'm thrilled that you mentioned that, because that was actually the other question I wanted to get to here. Doctorate of Education, I believe. How has that background in learning helped your KM expertise? I love the mashing together of these two fields. What's your own experience there?
Yeah, you know, this is the focus on the individual and learning. Just really an understanding of how people can learn and grow from the expertise of others, you know, and there's research to highlight, you know, self-efficacy and, you know, creating the constructing knowledge and what that means, to how facilitators can play a role in helping people come to their own answers and to their learning. And so I think it is important to always keep in mind, regardless of, you know, how people come to KM, that it's really all about someone expanding their capability beyond their current level of knowledge and embracing new skills and achieving a desired outcome that they would not have been able to do on their own. And there's many philosophies, theories, and learning and development that lend itself to KM, and we are educators, ultimately. We kind of said, I heard facilitators describe as being masters of process. You guide people through an efficient process where they're walking the path and doing the work, but you're kind of guiding them down that path. In many respects, you know, KM is the same. You know, we guide people through certain processes of how you can share your expertise, of how you can even answer a question and use resources available. And so the outcomes are very similar. And so there's so many natural synergies between the two fields.
Fantastic. Really exciting, Reggie. Now, you're hitting on a ton of the things that I really love to talk about. I mean, you mentioned micro-learning. I like to talk about the five moments of need from a learning perspective. There's this phrase that's in the learning community called learning at the point of need, and I've co-opted that to talk about knowledge at the point of need. It seems like you've pulled on a lot of your especially distance learning background in order to fuel your KM expertise. As we move forward here, what are you most excited about in the field of KM broadly? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Well, it may sound cliche, but I am really excited about AI. I am really excited. I do think it will challenge those in the KM field to evolve their skill set. I was reading something the other day. It was actually Harvard Business Review that highlighted that a few things are important with AI. One, you know, the concept of prompt engineering, which may be a short-lived skill, but it's an immediate skill nevertheless, to be able to ask a specific question and get a helpful, valuable response from AI. That's something that I think those in knowledge management and those that have expertise would be uniquely positioned to do. But the other thing which I was really excited about is this thought around problem formulation, where if you ask a general high-level complex question to AI, you may get something so broad and general it's really not of value. But if you learn how to break down problems, reformat problems, and ask the right question and break up problems in a way where now you're getting at the heart of what issue is trying to be solved. Knowledge managers, again, I think are uniquely positioned to be able to kind of think through this process, and that will be a more important skill set for us to pick up. And then the final thing I'm excited about is like validation. I've heard AI described as your really smart friend that sometimes says inappropriate things that you have to referee.
Yeah.
And so I think that is also going to be in the realm of a knowledge manager, to be able to fact check, to make sure that things are not offensive, that they're compliant and it's legally palatable.
Well, not just offensive or compliant, but also, is it right or not? If you've got that really smart friend, you tend to believe what they say. But what happens when they're misinformed on one of the 100 things that they're expert in? You know, I mean, there's danger in that, if not for a good human in the loop sort of experience. So I agree with everything that you shared there. That's great. If there's one thing an organization needs to do to be successful with a KM initiative, a KM transformation, what would that be?
So So I won't state the obvious, which I mentioned earlier, which is I have strong sponsorship. So I won't.
That's a great one, though. I'm glad you restated it. That is important.
It's huge. But the other thing I would say is integrate processes into the flow of work. One of the areas that we really focus on is oftentimes when you bring something that aligns the KM to the organization, people have the tendency to sometimes view it as something additional that they have to do on top of their job, instead of this is how we evolve how we work so that we're more efficient. And so an organization should really think through a full integration. These are processes. These are tools. You have a hammer and a saw. We're giving you a screwdriver now for your toolbox. Some of that integration would entail, how are you communicating all of your key KPIs? Well, you know, some knowledge KPIs should be a part of that because it is a new additional capability that you now have available to you to drive towards specific outcomes. So that integration is important. It's important at the very front of any kind of initiative to kind of set that expectation. So it's really kind of taken to the level it needs to be taken to. But that integration is key.
You know, the processes around knowledge sharing, knowledge capture, KM in general are not discussed enough. So I appreciate you raising that. We always talk of KM in terms of people, process, content, culture, and technology. And it's just a little too easy to skip over process because it's boring. Let's face it, it's boring, but it is so critical. I also think a lot about the fact that, you know, when we talk about knowledge transfer and knowledge sharing, you can't just stare at somebody and say, hey, transfer your knowledge, share your knowledge. Oh. You've got to give them those prompts. You've got to ask the right questions. And that's a big part of that. How have you lined up that sort of sharing at ADP? How do you get one of your stakeholders to know they have something that should be shared or that it's time to share something they've learned?
Yeah, gosh, that's a great question. And I love the phrase that you said a little bit earlier, knowledge at the point of need. I think I'm going to have to drop that in the meeting too.
Good deal. You got it. It's yours.
But it's just that, you know, people are more focused when you can talk about something specific and pressing and something that's on their mind. And so with a lot of the stakeholders we work with, there's always an initiative. There's always a business project. And there's always pain points with all of the things, important things that our stakeholders are trying to do. And so I've found it helpful to really kind of identify what the pain is. Number one, what's important that needs to get accomplished and what has been the pain that is keeping them up at night with their ability to accomplish the goal. And I relate knowledge to that. It's a little bit too big to come in and just talk about KM unrelated from everything, because then, you know, they kind of look at me like I'm just talking about knowledge for knowledge's sake. But I always find it more helpful and constructive to talk about knowledge processes in service of a big initiative that really needs to go right, or new technology that's launching and we have to make sure that all of our associates are on board with this and our new hires are able to get ramped up quickly. And it starts to connect the dots for them when I highlight the specific initiative that it's on the table.
That's great. Talk in terms of business outcomes and what it means to your stakeholders and your clients, and people will do KM whether they want to use those letters or not. I got it. So you've obviously had a very successful career, or you were in the midst of a very successful career. I don't want to retire you yet, Reggie. What's your advice to somebody who wants to be you, who wants to excel in KM?
Yeah, so I'll just highlight that I always feel like I'm learning every day. I feel like I have not arrived. There's always something that comes up on the horizon where I'm like, what, that happened? Let's address it. So I always feel like, and maybe that's why I love it, right? I always feel like the field and discipline keeps me on my toes, because there's always something unanticipated that emerges, and people are unpredictable, you know, so it just keeps me right there. But I would say for someone wanting to get into the field, I may be a little bit biased towards this, but, you know, I think learning and development has been very helpful for me, specifically in what it can offer from appreciating that how people learn, what's helpful to help people be able to adopt new skills and grow. And then also from a facilitation training standpoint, I use that background every single day. helping stakeholders understand something, teaching something new, facilitating a dialogue around the key process and what needs to be created. And these are our facilitation skills. And it's just one of the things that I think as a knowledge manager, we just do. And it really is an important skill to be able to convene people together. I know COPs, communities of practice, are big, but even if we don't call whatever we're doing necessarily a community of practice, when we're trying to bring people together to discuss certain items and we're sharing expertise and documenting those, in a large sense, that is facilitating kind of a community and that dialogue. And so facilitation skills, developing that, I also think is super helpful. And then the last thing I'll just leave with is join an organization that has a methodology around KM. I was enamored when I first started with Knowledge Spiral and Anaka, and I wasn't a huge proponent at the time of KCS until I really had an opportunity to really explore the methodology, the practices and techniques. And that really provided me a platform and framework to explore other areas of KM that may not be so prominently talked about in the methodology, but it really helped me in a very straightforward way kind of get a good A to Z of some of the important things that we need to think about in this discipline of KM. And so I would recommend that as well. So one, you know, have an appreciation for learning. Two, develop facilitation skills because you'll be using them all the time. And then three, join an organization that has a methodology on KM because that will help to advance your understanding faster.
Nice. Well, Reggie, it's been a great conversation, and I appreciate all of your insights as well as your leadership in the field. With that, I will say again, thank you, Reggie Adams, Director of Information Development at ADP. And for our listeners, thanks for joining this episode of KnowledgeCast. To check out more, please visit our website at enterprise-knowledge.com. Thanks, everybody.